Chiefs of the Court, Frederick Daly, on behalf of the plaintiff, Willie Finney. Reading this decision of the hearing officer, on first instance, one would conclude that the credibility of the plaintiff was accepted by the hearing officer. On the last page of the decision, the hearing officer stated that Mr. Finney testified to being able to sit for over 1 hour and lift up to 20 pounds. His testimony is consistent with the exertional demands of a service center representative. However, once you look at the actual transcript of what the plaintiff stated at the hearing, he stated that he could sit for up to an hour and a half at the most, at one time, and then as the day wore on, the amount of time he could sit diminishes. And he indicated that in the course of a full day, he would not even be able to sit for 4 hours. Sitting is the most difficult thing for Mr. Finney. He can stand for, he said, probably up to about an hour, and he spends most of his time sitting down. The hearing officer also purported to accept as credible the plaintiff's testimony when he stated that in the final page of his decision, that the appellant characterized his pain as low-grade and not debilitating. He did say that at one point in the transcript, but that was only to the pain that he felt in his left buttock. He also testified in detail about as he sat, he had a stretching and a pain in his back. He needed to change position, stand up, lay down. He had radiating pain along his hip down into his toes, and he had a tingling sensation in his toes. Therefore, once it's found that the hearing officer indicated that he was accepting a credibility finding, but when you look at the transcript, he actually did not, then the error here by the hearing officer is that he did not follow a credibility finding. He must follow, according to this court's decision in Zarowski, and Zarowski referred to the Social Security ruling of 96-7P, where the adjudicator must consider at that point a number of factors, the daily activities, the pain medication, the longitudinal history. For instance, Mr. Finney had a longitudinal history of going back to 1985 when he had a herniated disc. He had testimony of working on through 1996 with complaining to his doctors about pain. So the credibility criteria was not followed in this case. Included in that credibility criteria is there must be a proper residual functional capacity assessment. The hearing officer just said he can sit for an hour so he can do sedentary work. That's not an RFC assessment. RFC assessment is the hearing officer gives a lip service to what he was supposed to do when he refers to the regulation at 20 CFR 404.15.29. However, he doesn't follow it. He does no pain analysis of this plaintiff. Instead, he says it's low grade and not debilitating, so therefore he gives absolutely no analysis to the pain alleged by the plaintiff. Interestingly, when he's referring to credibility and RFC, all the hearing officer ever does is goes back to the medical records, and he refers to Dr. Lamb, the treating doctor, and the consultative doctor, Dr. Kahn, as if only the way the hearing officer himself interprets medical examination. And he did discuss the residual functional capacity assessment of Dr. Lamb, the treating doctor, who put the plaintiff at less than sedentary work. However, when he discussed the consultative doctor, his own expert, Dr. Kahn, he referred to the findings. Apparently, in his own interpretation, kind of plain doctor, he decided they weren't that significant. He ignored totally the fact that Dr. Kahn concluded his report by saying that this individual cannot perform prolonged sitting. Dr. Kahn attached a residual functional capacity assessment form that said, in an 8-hour day, less than 6 hours of sitting. That was his own expert. Two RFCs in the file, rejects one, doesn't discuss the other. The ALJ in this case did not choose between conflicting evidence. He decided to overrule the doctor's RFC assessments, and that's improper.
What about this length of time of sitting? This is not 6 hours straight. I assume it means you can get up and walk around a little bit, but that's still part of the 6 hours, or once he gets up and walks around, does it start a new clock?
Well, sedentary work generally is 6 hours out of 8 hours. And the vocational expert said, even though Mr. Finney performed his job as a data entry clerk in a very rushed way, at sitting up to 7 hours and not getting a lot of opportunities for breaks, ordinarily it can be performed where you get, basically, if you have a sedentary job, you get 15 minutes to take a break maybe in the morning, and sometimes you get a break in the afternoon, you get your lunch break, and that's where your 2 hours comes in. But it's mostly sitting. He's a data entry clerk, so he's sitting. He had to use his hands. There's evidence in the record that he had tennis elbow and perhaps tendonitis. He testified that he had difficulty with the use of his hands. The ALJ has to discuss it. He totally ignored it in the decision. He said he can't use a keyboard anymore. At the hearing, the attorney representing Mr. Finney asked the vocational expert in the data entry jobs, what about if he can only occasionally use his hands? Can he have that job? He said no. He said, the attorney said, does it have to be repetitive use of the hands? The vocational expert said yes. ALJ never deals with the use of the hands. I know the government argues that he had the problem with the tennis elbow from bow hunting. Well, so he has. We know he has the problem. The question is, and they cited a 1982 Merck manual that says that you have to have some violent action on the arm, whereas the 1999 Merck says it's just a matter of overuse. So if he's already got the tennis elbow and he's has to have overuse or constantly using it repetitively, it has to be considered in the decision. It just can't totally be ignored. In this case, this court has repeatedly indicated that it has to be able to trace the path of an adjudicator's decision. And in this case, it just cannot trace the path of how he arrived at his decision.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Russell?
Good morning, Your Honors. Nancy Russell for Respondent Railroad Retirement Board. The reason we're here this morning, Your Honors, is because Mr. Finney's job was abolished, not because he's disabled from performing that job. Mr. Finney worked as a service center representative in the railroad industry.
Well, that's the question. Now, what your opponent is saying is that the ALJ ignored two critical questions. One, the last one he mentioned, impaired ability to use his hands in typing, and then also the fact that there was conflicting evidence about his ability to sit for long periods of time.
As far as the ability to use his hands, the evidence does not support a restriction on an ability to use his hands.
All he said was that the ALJ didn't discuss it. Is that correct?
No, it's not. The ALJ did discuss it, the impairment of the upper extremity in the decision issued on January 10th, 2000.
What did he say?
In that decision,
that you contend was adequate.
Pardon me?
What did he say that you contend made his finding adequate within the law?
I believe that what he said that I thought was adequate was the fact that he reviewed the medical evidence that did not support the from the treating physician that did not support the restrictions that the treating physician later found.
Based also, on what? That's his conclusion. But what did he base it on?
He based it upon the medical records of the treating physician. The treating physician's medical records failed to document any consistent impairment of the arm. There was no diagnosis of tendonitis. Well, there was an original diagnosis of tendonitis in January of 94. However, that was from the treating internist, and the treating internist later was unsuccessful in treating the impairment, so he referred him to a specialist. At that point in time is when tennis elbow was diagnosed. Within 2 weeks after the proper diagnosis was given, there was dramatic recovery from that. There is an indication in 1994, again, and this is during the period of time that he was working as a service center representative, that he experienced an aggravation of the tennis elbow. And at that point in time, that was related to, I believe that it's lifting his waders, which I'm not a sportsman, but I think it's related to fishing. And that was the activity. There's no evidence in the file regarding complaints of arm impairments related to the activity of typing as is required by the job of service center representative. There was an original allegation in January of 94. However, that is when Mr. Finney first started performing the job of service center representative. At that point in time, for the following 3 years when he performed that job, there are no additional complaints indicating that the activity of typing in any way caused problems with his arm.
When you say the job was eliminated, does that mean that had they not moved to Minneapolis or wherever they went, that he would have continued to work?
Indeed, he would have. He would have continued to work as a service center representative in Wisconsin. They were located in Wisconsin, and in July of 1996, Mr. Finney went to go see his treating physician. At that point in time, he indicated that his employer was relocating to Minnesota and that there was a position available for him in Minnesota with his employer, but it would not be that of customer service representative. It would be a job which would require him to carry as much as 50 pounds on a frequent basis and also do frequent stooping and frequent bending and frequent crawling, I believe.
It wasn't more or less sedentary job, obviously.
Correct. The job in Minnesota was not sedentary.
No, there was this buyout. Was that some sort of an early retirement, or what's a buyout?
The buyout was not an early retirement per se under the Act. Under the Railroad Retirement Act, it provides for two types of disability annuities. The one is an occupational disability annuity, and that's the issue before the court today. And that's available to career railroad employees. And in order to be entitled to that annuity, an individual need only be disabled for his regular railroad occupation and have 20 years of service, or be age 60 with 10 years of service.
Well, is that an acknowledgement of disability somewhere?
I would argue in the way the buyout was structured was an argument against disability. Mr. Finney had the buyout structured so that he would receive an additional 2 years of railroad service. That additional 2 years of railroad service allowed him to get to 30 years of service, and that 30 years of service is the service required in order to receive an age and service annuity at the youngest age possible, age 60.
That's just a normal retirement annuity, not disability?
That's a normal retirement annuity, correct. As for the allegations regarding the hearings officer's failure to address the back impairment, again, the hearings officer did address the back impairment. He noted the testimony which was provided and indicated that these restrictions that existed previously did not prevent him from performing the job at the time he worked in 1994 through 1996. And the hearings officer noted, too, that the restrictions by the physicians were inconsistent with the findings of the medical records during the period of time that he actually performed the job. As to the claims regarding tendinitis, there is no evidence supporting any clinical findings supporting a diagnosis of tendinitis. The tendinitis issue was presented in January of 1994, was later correctly diagnosed as tennis elbow, and then there is a conclusory statement made, but with no findings supporting any diagnosis of tendinitis. And that conclusory statement, I believe, is in July of 96. At the time that Mr. Finney approached his treating physician and asked his treating physician, you know, I don't think I want to take the job in Minnesota because of what those exertional requirements will be. I'm thinking I want to retire. At that point in time, his physician told him, I don't know if you'll indicated that I don't know if you qualify for disability, that would depend upon your company's policy, which would indicate that the physician himself did not think that Mr. Finney at that point in time was precluded from performing sedentary work. As to the credibility determinations and the statements regarding the hearings officer's acceptance of credibility and then refusing to accept as credible other items, hearings officer is clearly capable and has the authority to find some testimony credible and disregard other testimonies, particularly when the testimony is in conflict with the evidence of record, as is the case before the court today. In conclusion, I would just like to note that Mr. Finney's job was abolished, and that is the reason that he filed for his disability. He filed for his disability 2 years later, alleging disability retroactive to 1996 when he last worked in the railroad industry. When Mr. Finney's employer relocated to Minnesota, Mr. Finney didn't suddenly become disabled. He was able to perform the job before he relocated to Minnesota. He would still be performing that job in Wisconsin today and be gainfully employed in the railroad industry were it not for the fact that his employer relocated. These reasons and the reasons stated in our brief, I respectfully request that the board's decision be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Rosenthal. Mr. Daly?
Much of what the government's position is here seems to be post hoc rationalizations, which is precluded by the SEC versus Chenery United States Supreme Court case, basically bringing in rationales the ALJ never gave and asking the court to accept those as rationale. And here we have to trace the path of the hearing officer's decision, and he has to follow the rulings and the regulations. And simply put, she says, the government counsel says, he can disregard testimony. Well, he doesn't have to accept everything, but he has to discuss it. He has to discuss testimony. He referred to 404.15.29. He didn't apply it. The only time he ever discussed testimony was he appears to have accepted it at the very end, as I had mentioned earlier. And that is not meeting with this court's requirements in Zurowski of meeting the credibility requirements. The fact that his job was abolished, the hearing officer never used that as a reason, and this court shouldn't. So I think based on the record as a whole, and especially the fact that the consultative examiner, Dr. Kahn, gave an RFC of less than sedentary, and the hearing officer never even, she said he rejected it, he never even discussed it. You wouldn't even know that it was in the record from reading his decision. And so based on the record as a whole, there is not substantial evidence, and there's error of law, and this case should be reversed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to both counsel. This case for argument is Ducato versus United States. Mr.